Sharing a good meal with family or close friends is one of the great pleasures of life. It's normally a time when we are relaxed, we can catch up with our loved ones, have some really deep conversations about how they're feeling and how people think. I don't know if you've noticed how much of Jesus' ministry is spent around food or mealtimes. It's quite amazing. It starts off with a wedding feast in Cana, goes to examples of going to Mary and Martha's for a meal, when his feet are washed by Mary Magdalene, the Last Supper, cooking fish on the beach. He gained a reputation for eating meals with sinners and tax collectors, such as Zacchaeus. In biblical times, being asked for a meal had great significance. The host guaranteed his hospitality and the protection of his guests. An extreme example is in Genesis 19, when Lot offers his daughters to sexual abuse to save the angels of God from the men of Sodom. Quite extreme, really. In our first part of the reading, the prominent Pharisee is actually breaking all the social rules. He's probably invited Jesus back for a meal after attending the local synagogue. And if the aim of finding a reason to criticize Jesus, and what's he do? He brings along an ill man as a stooge. But Jesus is a bit too savvy, isn't he? And he asks him a question. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? And they just don't reply. So anyway, he heals the guy and sends a man on his way. And then he asks them, will they pull their son or ox out of a well on a Sabbath? Now, Jesus gets quite confrontational, and having noticed how they jostle for the seating places of honour, gives a short parable about losing a high place at a wedding feast. For those, it's not me, I'm afraid, who like watching X Factor, a couple of weeks or so ago, there was the people all going for the chairs before going to the boot camp, and they're sitting up there, and all of a sudden they get pulled off and put out of the competition. It's a bit like that, isn't it? You've been at a high table and you're put down. But he further challenges his hosts and his friends by saying, you know, you're offering hospitality to your friends, they're going to invite you back. What you really need to be doing is asking people who won't ask you back. And for this, if you do that, you'll be blessed at the resurrection of the righteous. Now, one of the guests is probably thinks he's being smart. He says, blessed is the man who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. What he's really trying to say is, he wants Jesus to say that it will happen and it will be for the Jews and the Jewish leaders. But Jesus turns it round and tells them the parable of the great banquet, where the Jews are depicted as a people who have been already notified of the banquet, but find one excuse after another as to why they can't attend. And not surprisingly, the master is rather unhappy, and he instructs his servant to go out and get the disadvantaged, which means you and me, the Gentiles. But there's still room, and he sends his servants out again to press more people in. Now, the first part of this, the reading that Eileen read, is really about wrong attitudes and priorities. Some of you may know a saying in business, there's no such thing as a free lunch. The final part of the chapter, Jesus tells the crowd and the disciples that unless we do three things, we cannot be his disciple. And the reading is concluded by the words just now, he who has an ear, let him hear. In other words, take note. Now, the first one in verse 26, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and his mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. Now, that is probably one of the most shocking verses in the Bible. It contradicts one of the Ten Commandments about loving one's mother and father. It contradicts about loving your enemy. So why do you hate your family? And one reason I actually chose this version of the lectionary reading was actually the verse part of Matthew. It's because on the great banquet, but this bit follows on so quite as well. You know, a better record of this teaching is in Matthew 10, verse 37. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. It's not a matter of not loving our family. It's not a matter of not loving them less than we did. In fact, we'll probably love them more. Because of God's Spirit, we'd like to be more patient, kind, forgiving. But our total priority is loving God. The second condition is found in verse 27. It's to carry our cross and follow him. Now, several of the disciples literally did carry their cross to their crucifixion. Now, we all have responsibilities and burdens, and these can be at times quite onerous. I don't think this means we should not seek practical help with, say, looking after a frail parent. It doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about it, but really our inner strength needs to come from looking to Jesus. The guests of the great banquet allow their crosses of buying a field, a team of oxen, getting married, as a reason not to come to Jesus. Nothing should get in our way. Now, the third cannot comes after the examples of calculating the cost of a building project or of a king about to go to war, where everything has to be given up. Now, I occasionally watch the TV programme Grand Designs. Some of the schemes are quite wacky, generally innovative, sometimes glorious, but there's one constant theme. They always overrun the budget, invariably, every time. And they eventually, the reason why they get to the end at all is because they've kept to the vision of where they want to get to. So what sort of cost do we face? Well, if you look back, I think you may have found, hopefully have found, that you've probably given up some of your bad habits, behaviour, attitudes. In the last few weeks in home group, we've been going through some of the Psalms. We've spent considerable time looking at Psalm 119, which is 176 verses, whatever it is. And the writer in that is expressing his love for God's law. We need to avoid legalism that binds us in fearful, obsessive effort, but rather instead for that love of God's law to help protect us from the opinion of others, from self-deceit, pride, from wrongdoing, with all the hurtful consequences of guilt. We need to let God be the Lord over all our life, and that includes our money. As Ian remarked last week, our response to God's goodness is for us to be open-handed and generous. My experience is that being generous leads to amazing blessings. It's how we use our time. If you have a relationship with anybody, you have to invest time in it. It doesn't just happen. Husbands and wives know that too well. And it's time you spend in prayer, time you spend reading the Bible. It's about also about how we serve in a variety of ways. You know, it might be being a street pastor. It might be cutting the grass. It might be giving lifts to people to church. It might be cleaning and decorating the church at different times. It can also be responding to God's nudges to speak or to help others. But what we have to do is to ensure our faith and relationship with God is the most important thing in our lives. If we do that, we will be distinctive salt to our family and all we are in contact with. Unfortunately, life is never plain sailing, is it? The unexpected occurs. Perhaps we're ill ourselves. Perhaps our loved ones are ill. There can be financial setbacks. People lose their job. It can be the death of one of our human rocks we get strength from. It might be a time of a desert experience when God can seem distant. And all these experiences can challenge our faith. But I don't know about you. It's when the hard times of life come that we renew our focus on God, that we often spiritually grow the most because we're not relying on our own strengths. At those times, we're often unduly greatly blessed and we can smell the meal to come. I looked around a week or two ago and I looked here and I thought, do you know something? It's been a week or two of starting the reordering in this church. And a large percentage of people here were not really here, weren't here then, or basically on the out, only just arrived. And I thought I'd just share one or two things. Richard, who was the rector at the time, first broached with me the idea of doing some reordering in here. It was after the annual church meeting in March, April 2002. And we spent quite a lot of time, spent about a year going around looking at different churches, what had been done, what hadn't been done, before we started thinking about architects. And we got some prices end of August 2005, taking into account costs like architects' fees, archaeology costs, you name it. It was coming out £160,000. And if we had all our ideas for phase two, the total cost would come at £225,000. In January 2006, I reported to the PCC that we just had £91,000 available. And that even allowing for tweaks here, taking bits out, getting a local contractor to do some of the work that the big people weren't doing, I could get it down to about £130,000, all being well. Come along February, March time, Rich and I were getting a wee bit worried. We didn't tell anybody like that. We were quite worried because we seemed to have hit a wall. The grants weren't coming in. People who thought grants were going to give hadn't got any money, or they weren't giving what they couldn't do anything. And we had this conversation. Do we just pull the plug and pass all the money back? Do we abort it all? In June, we'd only climbed to £95,000, but we took the decision to start on October the 29th. And I can tell you, the experience of the reordering blew our minds. It went beyond our wildest imaginations. By May 2007, we'd actually raised £163,000. We'd completed all the wish list as well of phase two, which included the screen, the projector, the chairs, new glass in the windows here, flood lighting outside, lights here, and so it just went on. We came in over 25% under budget. Now, for those who've had any building experience at all, that does not happen. Seriously, sorry, it doesn't happen. We broke every natural rule. If you had an extension in your house, does it cost you any less than you originally budgeted for? I doubt it. And actually, the majority of the money came from the church membership. When Richard initially broached the idea, he thought it would be the other way around. We had about £65,000 from grants in total at the end. But during that time, we still paid our family person full. We still gave 10% of our general giving to charity. At the Thanksgiving service, I set out a series of P's for our success. It was purpose, people, with the right people at various areas. We had patience, provision of money. We persevered. There was perspiration, prayer, and there was praise. I've left some photographs at the back showing how things went. You know, the blessings we've had from this building being able to be freely used just keep coming. You know, there's the Holiday Club, there's Messy Church. And yesterday evening, for me, was perhaps the culmination, the completion of a series of dreams going back 10, 15 years. We had a soul group meeting here last night, and there's about 60-odd people came from all over the place. There was somebody from Upminster, there was Burnham on Crouch, there was Stebbing, there was Tilbury Juxta Clare, there should have been people from Felixstowe as well, came here, used our car park. We're a central place, good car park. They walked through a tidy, well-respected churchyard. They came into the building, which was warm and welcoming. They had drinks in the vestry kitchen out there. We had a meal in the hall from a well-appointed kitchen. And we came in and we were in here and we had some of the most wonderful teaching, which is really going to equip our church and people outside. But those who are here, and I'm sorry more of you weren't here, I don't know. I was certainly touched by that encounter with God last night. I hope others were as well. And they all left at the end from a well-lit car park. God does amazing things. What a wonderful thing you have. But like a building project, we're all work in progress. And we can stand in the grace of God and can rightly say great things he has done. The lesson from the reordering project is that do not restrict the things that God can do. If you just expect God to do a little, he'll only do a little. Open your mind up. Don't restrict yourself as to what you are prepared to do. Step out in faith and let God be with you. Be generous of your time, your attitude, and your money, and he will bless you beyond your wildest expectations. You know, we are his invited guests to his dinner party. And like the Jewish procedure, if you're an invited guest, you have his protection. You have his love forever and those blessings. And you know something? All you have to do is to accept the dinner party invitation. Just come.